What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, changing recording times like Barrow changed managers. Coming up, championship previews and sifting through the managerial movements in Leagues 1 and 2, including a wild one at Tranmere and Barrow's adaptation of 28 Days Later. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Hope you're doing well, listener. We're here to talk all things Football League for you. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined, as ever, by my two favourite podcasting pals. Adrian Clark's here. How you doing, Clarky?
Very nice. Yeah, I'm all good. So, yeah, I was at the spa yesterday, so I've had a night. I feel nicely refreshed and pampered. It was lovely to think about absolutely nothing yesterday, but now I'm back on it.
I'm envious of you. Sam Parkin's here as well. You okay, Sam?
Yeah, just surprised that you've mentioned Barrow twice and not put a wheel somewhere. Before it. That's normally your stick, isn't it, Matt?
Give me time.
Yeah, the podcast isn't over yet. I'll try not to disappoint you. Right, before we get going, let me remind you that our partners, Quinbet, have an offer where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Okay, we're going to start, as ever, in the Championship. And there was a Monday night matchup, and there was a big win for Derby County. They beat Portsmouth by a 2-0 at Fratton Park. Sam, you can cover the Pompey angle for us. But in terms of the winners, Adrian, as we record, and there are midweek games to come, but as we record, they're 3 points from the playoff places, Derby. I mean, they're outsiders, aren't they? But they're not going away.
No, they're not going away. They pick up points away from home, don't they? And yeah, they're a really solid team. Probably bad opponents for Portsmouth, because Derby don't really want that much of the ball, but they're very committed and organised under John Eustace, and when they break forward, they've got good players, good individuals, you know. So probably was in terms of styles, it probably wasn't a great matchup for Pompey. But yeah, look, Derby, I think, were good value. You'll look at the stats and you'll say, oh, blimey, you know, Pompey had all these shots, and they weren't any real clear chances, I wouldn't say. There's a good save from O'Donnell at one point, but yeah, by and large, I think Derby were good defending. Matt Clark was excellent. I like the left back. He's been playing really, really well, actually. Derry Merkin, not particularly well known player, but someone that I know Derby fans think a lot of. And then obviously once if they defend well, then they break quickly, don't they? And they've got good players to do that. Andrew Mang was unlucky not to score, wasn't he? It was a brilliant run from him. And Bobby Clark, I don't know if you saw this one, he weaved in and out of two or three players on the left-hand side. Should have cut it back, hit it into the side netting. Ward hit a free kick on the underside of the bar. So they had their moments, but the big breakthrough was obviously from a corner. Just really intelligent play from Sammy Smodex. Pulled into space, away from the zonal markers. They headed it straight to him. Great touch, smashes it in. And that's job done from Derby County's point of view. So, yeah, I like Derby. You know, I've seen them play well a few times now. I think they're still a bit short in terms of playoffs, and I cannot see them getting through the playoffs and eventually going up this season. But I think it's definitely been a good campaign for them. No matter what happens from here on in, I think they're progressing really, really nicely.
Sam, we kept saying about Portsmouth, it's the home form that's going to keep them off. Well, they've lost their last four at Fratton Park now, and they've failed to score in three of those games. And with West Brom and Oxford picking up points, they're far from safe. They're only a point above the drop zone, despite that dominance in terms of possession and shots on Monday night.
Yeah, that's probably the most worrying aspect as we sit here this morning, that Leicester got beaten at home by QPR. Sheffield Wednesday have gone, we know that, but all the other teams are showing signs of life, and they're showing the absolute opposite at the moment, Pompey. And Clark is right, you know, the four players probably the difference. I think last night, even in a game where there wasn't many chances, neither goalkeeper was overly worked, but he still had a sense that Derby's quality at the front end would come to fruition at some stage. And obviously Smodic's provided the goal. Adjumang, as Adrian said, had that raid down the left-hand side, which could have yielded the second goal, and never really felt that Portsmouth were going to get one. And it's a massive problem. It's a massive problem having left Colby Bishop on the side, rotating the wide players, the 10. Segicic sometimes plays there. Obviously, Chaplin in there last night, which has not been a success so far, that signing. Everyone really enthused about Chaplin coming back to his boyhood club, but that's not really materialised. So, massive problem. And yeah, the old Achilles heel defending set pieces coming to roost, a different type of goal, of course, in the way that it was finished off and the space that he was able to find Smodic. But it's a similar sinking feeling, I think, for Pompey this morning. So, I mean, John Messino said it, not as in as many words as I'm probably about to, but he kind of said they would have... they're still in a reasonably good spot and they got the game in hand. And I think probably, kind of hand on heart, if you'd have offered them 20th, knowing the squad that they had to work with, even from January, I think they probably would have taken it at this stage. You know, still an opportunity to remain in the Championship, which would be an incredible achievement. But following on from that game I saw a few weeks ago against Hull, it's just the confidence levels of the front players that worries me. It really does. And he spoke to Jonathan Oakes at Sky after the game about repetition on the training ground, working on those attacking patterns. I'm sure they've been doing that across the last few weeks and it's not changed their fortune. So it's going to take one or two of those front players to start producing, or they're going to have to be reliant on the likes of Swanson and Shaughnessy, who's back now, I think, on the bench last night. Regan Paul, can they find a goal from a set piece and keep clean sheets to get enough points? But it's going to be a battle, and they'll be under no illusions that it's going to be a real tense few weeks ahead.
Well, I jumped onto a Forest podcast for a second there, because basically everything that you've just said about Portsmouth applies to my lot. Anyway, we'll be covering them a lot next season, so let's not worry about that for now. Derby host Birmingham on Saturday. Pompey go to Dr. QPR, though, so maybe anything's possible, although maybe Rangers have turned their season round after that win on Saturday. We're going to look ahead to the weekend's action in more detail next. And one of the other early kickoffs, aside from Derby on Saturday, sees one team trying to stay in the Championship, host another trying to get out of it, as Middlesbrough travel to Ewood Park to face Blackburn. What a win that was, Sam, for Blackburn at the weekend. Quite the way to do it at Millwall as well. A Jorgensen brace in the final 10 minutes. And they sort of needed that, didn't they? Because it stuttered a little bit, only 1 point from the previous four under Michael O'Neill. But as we've talked about all season, their problem comes when they play at Ewood Park.
I mean, that had passed me by a little bit. Four home wins all season. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? For Blackburn, I think they've always had that capability across the last 4 or 5 years of being a difficult opponent on the road. There's something, me saying that out loud, that rings true. And it was certainly the case at the weekend. And it obviously gets a little bit convoluted, by the Zach Sturge red card, which I'll come on to. So they were a little bit fortuitous there. I think that was one that would split opinion down the middle. But I think in the main, it was a really good performance. I think that they probably had the upper hand for the majority. Mill did have a few chances at 1-0. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty good performance. And only the first time since his initial game, his first game, Michael O'Neill, have scored more than one goal. And it was Jorgensen who got a brace on that occasion. He's got 5 goals now. Jorgensen, obviously off the bench here at the Den, all of them away from Ewood Park. So he could do with getting one in front of the home supporters, probably for his own sake, and also to build that confidence, which they've been lacking in the home fixtures. And coming up against the best away team in the division in Middlesbrough, they're going to be tested. And do they sit in and counter? I would suggest they probably will. Not so sure that was the complete game plan at the weekend, but I would imagine that is going to be their strong suit when they're playing against the best teams in the division. So I expect them to be compact and probably just play on the counter in this game. The fixtures are really tough for Blackburn. That's what is a little bit concerning. Birmingham away next after this game, Stoke away, Sheffield United away. They finished Coventry and Southampton. So they've got tough games against teams that are fighting at different ends of the table, of course, but big clubs in there and clubs that are underperforming. So they're going to be severely tested in their pursuit of survival. But yeah, a really good victory, and I thought a pretty good performance as well to add.
Last day of the season, home to Leicester. That could be blockbuster for Blackburn, couldn't it? Crikey. Middlesbrough, Clarkey, dropped points in heartbreaking fashion at the weekend, conceding a 96-minute equaliser at home to Bristol City. One of those, though, I mean, they might have got in and thought, well, Coventry lost, Millwall lost, Hull lost, Ipswich won, which didn't do them any favours. But I'm struggling to get a handle on where they are at the moment and if I think that they're going to get second place and if they believe that they're going to as well, because their form's dipped, right? Only two wins from seven isn't promotion form.
No, they're not in great form. I mean, they're dominating teams and they are making a lot of chances and creating enough, but they're not putting it away. You know, they've lost their shooting boots. Every opponent now that plays Middlesbrough just sits behind the ball and plays very, very defensively. And they're finding it tough, really tough at the Riverside to be ruthless. You know, they had more than enough chances to win against Bristol City. I mean, there's a one-on-one with Strelec. I mean, he completely fluffed that, but there were other chances as well. And then literally last kick of the game or last head of the game, Randall sticks a great header in at the near post from a corner. And yeah, it's a stunner for Borough, a real choker. What I will say about Borough is that their best performances have definitely been away. I mean, they've produced three magnificent away performances, haven't they? I remember the one at Sheffield United, I think it's hard to top. They're also really good at Birmingham, battered them, really good at QPR, annihilated them, but they're not really doing that at home. I think we know what sort of game this is going to be. It'll be attack v defence, and it's going to come down to will they take their chances, Middlesbrough, and who's he going to play? There is a fear over Hayden Hackney. Now, Hayden Hackney plays every game, okay? He never gets rested, but he did limp off the other day. Now, they're not sure, haven't really revealed at the time of recording how bad that injury is. So there's a decision to be made there. And there's, you know, there's a decision to be made on this sort of lopsided system. So they use Alan Brown out wide or Riley McGree out wide, sort of tucked in. Now, are they losing a creative player, someone that stretches play by doing that a little bit, I think, sometimes? So will Morgan Whittaker come back into the side, for example? I wonder. So, you know, there's a lot to like about Borough, but they're not in the best of form. That said, I think they will beat Blackburn. Blackburn's not an intimidating place to go. The crowd are very disillusioned. They haven't got a great attack. Their best form's definitely away. I see Borough winning this game and getting things back on track until they play at home again.
Historically, the first goal's been big in this one. Hasn't been a game where both teams have scored in any of the last five meetings. Another huge game this weekend, this one affecting the top of the table, goes down at Portman Road. Ipswich and Millwall both going for promotion. Mentioned, Clarkie, that Ipswich won at the weekend. Wasn't particularly impressive against Sheffield Wednesday, though, and not particularly impressive feels like the phrase we've used to describe the Tractor Boys for most of the season.
Oh, no, well, it's because we've got high standards. We think that they should, with the players, Ipswich should be walking the league and they should be playing swashbuckling football and scoring four or five every week. And it just hasn't worked out like that. They've got, like a broken record. I mean, you look at their form since Boxing Day, it isn't bad, really. They've won nine, they've drawn three, they've lost two. During that run, they've got seven clean sheets as well. So I think they've tidied up a little bit defensively. They've scored at least twice in 10 of those 14 matches since Boxing Day as well. You know, we just talked about Blackburn. They hardly ever score twice, you know. So it's sort of first world problems, really, for Ipswich. Jaden Philogene's back, so that's good. I think Wes Burns might be out, though. But Philogene and Clark, I just think they're the two match winners. They've been slow starters of late, Ipswich. That's been a bit of a problem. They were behind at half-time against Stoke and Leicester. They were only level at half-time against Wednesday and Hull. So they've sort of, they need to get off to a bit more of a flyer here against a team they drew 0-0 with on Boxing Day at the New Den. I wanted to mention Ivan Azon. I haven't really sort of seen a lot of him in the flesh yet. He looks a really interesting player. So he scored at Wednesday the other day. Really smart finish on the half volley left foot. And I was looking at his goals and some of his performances and quite like him. He's got his sharp, you know, really good sharp movement, excellent touch. He's sort of slippery and he's a different profile to Hurst. And I think he sort of flip-flops, doesn't he, Kieran McKenna, between going for the target man Hurst and Azon, who is more of a sort of a nippy pest of a striker. So, interesting to see who he goes with in this particular game. It might be Azon against a Millwall side that are really resolute and they've got a great centre-back partnership as well in Cramer and Cooper. So, yeah, this is a massive game, absolutely huge. If Ipswich start slow here, they could get beat. So I think it's about being switched on right from the get-go in this one. Huge, massive game.
And well done to Azon for getting his head on right. I'm not saying that Suffolk isn't beautiful, but to leave Como on loan must be a blow. Because, I mean, that's like the dream destination in European football.
Oh, come on. You've not seen some of those villages in Suffolk? You know, it's gorgeous.
Suffolk enchanting, as they say. Sam, it's only just come to my notice that this is the Sam Park in Derby, of course. You're going to take the Millwall angle on it for us. Yeah. I mean, ghouls like me, when Millwall lose a game, will go, oh dear, is this the bandwagon slowing down? Convince me why it's not.
Do you have a quick anecdote?
Oh, yes, please.
So, just prior to this fixture, although it was at the Den, Ipswich at the Den the year I was at Portman Road, I got kicked in the face on the previous Friday by a Dutch trialist.
Oh, I know this one well. Yes, and you got carried off on the little motor cart with the fist up to the lads. Never saw the trialist again.
Joe Rule drove me off on the golf buggy. Yeah, 15 stitches later, missed the game on the Saturday against Sheffield Wednesday. Fast forward to the next week. Played with the old mummy bandage on, didn't I, at the Den. Darren Curry goes down the left-hand side, last knock-ins, bends one in, parking with the bandage in off the underside of the bar, 2-1. Headed it. There you go, with the 15 stitches.
Yeah. Love it. And you didn't open it up? Didn't open up the wound?
I think there was quite a lot of that going on for the next week or two. But I really didn't want to head it. But Daz Curry put in a perler, stuck it in the rigging. There we go. So Millwall, I don't think they played particularly well at the weekend, but the big decision was the Sturge sending off. And I'm kind of 60-40 with maybe the officials, which may be a little bit controversial because there was covering defenders, but I still think the Blackburn attacker was in. He's slightly on an angle, but he was 100% going to get a shot away. So I understood it. It was harsh and it did obviously tilt on that moment, although I thought that Blackburn gave a good account of themselves. So a disappointing result and made even more so because it's Ipswich coming up and then it's Middlesbrough away, which I was aware of when they were one up against Blackburn at the weekend. You've got to keep hold of that if you've got any aspirations of getting in the top two, and then Norwich to come after that as well. So these are probably three, outside of Coventry, of the hardest games you could quite possibly have.
Top of the table after the last 10 games, Norwich.
Yeah, I banged their drum loudly, didn't I, after they beat Coventry. But when they lost the strikers, I digress, Norwich, Sargent, Touré, McCarmer, I thought there's no way it's sustainable. So I have no idea how they're continuing to go with such pace. Incredible job Philippe Clement's done. So back to Ipswich. I thought, you know, Millwall were tested by Blackburn. They made a double change at half time. He actually had to move the shape around a little bit. They played more of a back three in the second half. So that gives them a little bit of variety potentially for this game. But I just think back to the Coventry Millwall game recently, and Millwall were excellent. Probably shouldn't have lost on that day. Really took it to Coventry. They actually started with Langstaff, Ivanovic, Negley, Aziz and Ballo. So I could see them doing something similar. You know, they're going to be in the playoffs for all sense and purposes. You know, we know if teams go in sitting against Ipswich, yes, it can be tricky for the home side to break them down. And I know that's been a little bit of their kryptonite maybe across the last few seasons, but I just think Ipswich will maybe go for it with the attacking armoury that they've got. Aziz in particular, the potential to play Coburn and Ivanovic in the same lineup. I think there's thought that Connor Taylor could return, so you could have Kramer going back to right back, where him and Aziz have been a lovely partnership on that flank. So I could see them going for this game. You know, what use is a point, really? I think, you know, given the magnitude of these games, they could create something so special by being a bit front-footed. Ipswich as well, no Leif Davis, which they were going ballistic about, I think, at the club last week. 3-game ban for him. And no Kipre either. I think he's got one more game suspended. So, yeah, I think there's maybe going to be changes and Alex Neil, Barry Bannon. I'm not sure if that's completely worked him going in there. Obviously, different challenge for him in comparison to what he had at Sheffield Wednesday. So I'd expect changes and I'd expect possibly a front-footed Mill to go at it with Ipswich, but, you know, a tough game nonetheless.
Mm. Millwall haven't won at Portman Road since 2019.
I did see Ipswich batter Millwall. I think it was only 3-1 in the last promotion season, but I mean, it was like a performance that stuck with me. It was my first glimpse, I think, of Kieran McKenna's Ipswich in the Championship at Portman Road, and they were scintillating. It could have been 5 or 6 at half time. So if that memory's fresh for some of the players that remain, it could be a long afternoon for Millwall. But I fancy them to put up a fight here.
Mm. They will be without Zach Sturge after that red card, should mention. It's depressing we have to, but the online racist abuse that he suffered as a result of that red card just keeps happening, doesn't it? Okay, let's move on to Southampton against Oxford. Big one at both ends of the table again, this one. Southampton in action midweek. They host Norwich on Wednesday. I mean, really wanted to talk about Oxford because we haven't mentioned them much and they're doing good things. But let's have a word on the Saints, Sam. We've mentioned that they are sort of the form team coming up on the rails, aren't they? As we record, still outside the playoffs. That could change tonight. This is a sticky game for them, though, but they've got a run of games at home, culminating with the FA Cup quarterfinal against Arsenal. So potentially a good chance for them to get some more points on the board, albeit it's a tricky three fixtures, isn't it? Norwich, Oxford and then Ipswich.
It is indeed, and it's the one thing me and Clarkie got right last week on the prediction show, that Southampton could be the ones and duly go and beat the league leaders. And that was all about the tactical setup, I think, from Tondereka, which I think we've mentioned quite a few times. He's really impressing me. And I know it took a little bit of time to get them going, but it's the variety in his setup from game to game. And again, here, not playing with the wingers, going with the extra central midfield player, Bragg, the young lad holding midfield, which is a vital role in the Southampton setup. So he played really, really well. Yander and Downs are two advanced midfielders, joining in with the centre forward Larin, who's yet to taste defeat. I think they've won every game that he started. Doesn't maybe naturally catch the eye, but a bit of a bruiser, and I think he's a good focal point for the side when Ross Stewart, as he was at the weekend, not available. Cienza missing as well, which made it an even more impressive result. The goalkeeper was outstanding. Have you seen the save from Torp's header, is it, near post? One of the best saves you're going to see in the Championship this season. And I think there was question marks about Peretz when he first came in, taking over from Bazunu, but Peretz is looking like a fine piece of business. So I thought tactically it was a really clever way to go about things from the manager. Completely negated Onyeka and Grimes in the midfield, defended the box really well because naturally they had to be funneled into the flanks and put balls in. But Stevens and Harwood Bellis are a very good partnership right now. So yeah, lots to like about them. If they could get maximum points this week from those two home games, you'd still fancy him to beat Oxford, despite Oxford having a bit of a formula when they go away from home, which I'm sure Clark is going to tell us about. But this is a big one, isn't it? Tomorrow night, if they can turn over in form Norwich, they will go into Saturday's game full of confidence.
Right, apologies first of all to our friends Robin Cowan and Simon Watts and everybody else of an Oxford United persuasion, because I think that we've been sleeping on their survival chances. Unbeaten in 4, won 3 of these. They drew against Charlton on Saturday, Clarkie. I don't know if you saw this. It saw them awarded a penalty for the first time in 675 days. That's a quirk we probably shouldn't spend as much time talking about as we should, wondering how Matt Bloomfield has inspired this and praising him for doing so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they got a supporter that been wearing this silly blue beard, hadn't they? And he was pictured chucking it up in the air. Yeah, it was quite a nice moment. I mean, it should never have been a pen. I mean, it was a really, really soft one. Yeah, but anyway, they conceded a pen that definitely was at the end from Kieran Brown, and that was a bit crazy from him. And you do hope that those 2 points that were squandered don't come back to bite Oxford, because that was, you know, not great from Kieran Brown, who has actually been playing really well. I mean, he's made them it's a very new look Oxford, okay? So the defence is kind of the same. Defence and goalie are the same as they have been, and they are organised and solid and you know, no nonsense. And then the forward guys, they just look really different. It's a lot younger, and there's some different names in there. You know, that you've got Imaku or Pert Harris on the left. You've got Donnelly at 10, Stanley Mills, who's been there a while, but mainly more been out than in. He's in favour now, playing well. And you've got Lancashire up front, and even in midfield, it's Brannigan with Konak, who's a young player. So it looks really different. They're aggressive. They don't have much of the ball, and they absolutely play the percentage game. some of the numbers are crazy in terms of how many of their passes are long. Okay, so in the game against Charlton, a third of their passes were long, 33.1. I would say most teams in the Premier League are under 10%. In the Championship, I'd say most are sort of between 8 and 15% of their passes go long. Okay, just to give you a picture. Oxford, 33.1% of their passes went long. Against Blackburn, 33.5%. Preston, 27.9%. Against West Brom, 32%. So, you know, they are getting it up there and playing from there and applying pressure and pinning teams in and taking their chances. You know, 16 of their 36 goals are from set pieces this season, Oxford. So they get the ball up there, often draw a foul, put the ball in the box and you know, or a corner, and they get the job done. So yeah, look, they've showed real spirit, considering it's a really new team. As I've just said, a lot of players that haven't been particularly associated with Oxford for a while. I think they're doing excellently, and they'll make life awkward for Southampton, won't they? So yeah, it's funny because I know that Gary Rowett was sort of wanting to play a percentage style of football because he thought that was the only way with the group of players he's got, but there was pressure on him from above to maybe introduce a little bit more flair, and it didn't really work. Now what he has done is Bloomfield's introduced a lot more youth, and they are talented players, but they're playing what I would describe as a more efficient style of play. So yeah, they won't make it easy for Southampton, that's for sure.
Fascinating at both ends of the table, isn't it? Just before this this midweek match for Southampton and Oxford, at the bottom you've got Blackburn 42, Pompey and West Brom 40, and then in the relegation zone, Oxford 39, Leicester 38. It's going right down to the wire, and that's why we love it so much. All right, we'll dip into League One and League Two next. So we're not doing reviews or previews of these divisions on account of the midweek action. That would render them obsolete. So instead, we're going to talk about some managers who've come in and out of said leagues of late. Let's start with Northampton. Kevin Nolan given the boot. Colin Calderwood's back in temporary charge for the moment. Sam, you saw them last week. Do you think that Calderwood's going to be able to keep them up, or is that just cobblers?
Well, I had a lovely chat with him, actually. Swindon Massive.
Did you thank him for getting Forest out of League One in 2007 for me? 07,
I didn't. But it was really lovely. And do you know what? I completely had forgotten, or I didn't realise, that my former captain at Northampton was part of the staff as well. So I was chatting away to Colin Calderwood, and Ian Sampson, who's an absolute legend at Northampton Town, was there for, or has been there for decades, promotions, you name it, is the first team coach. So no sooner had I got stuck into some Swindon Town patter with Colin Calderwood, out came Samo as well. And it was just so nice to see him. I'd probably not spoken to him in 10, 15 years. So we had a good natter. They proceeded to lose quite limply, unfortunately, at AFC Wimbledon for them. And that was the end of Kevin Nolan. So those two into the breach, vastly experienced, of course, part of the furniture there in terms of Sam and Colin Calderwood, who's been the manager there previously. And, you know, I was interested to see which way they went at home to Burton. They played a back four, which is a bit of a rarity for them, against Peterborough in the previous home game, the derby, and done really well, I think, in terms of their level of performance. It was 1-1. They'd started as a back four at Wimbledon, and they'd got torn to shreds in the first half, actually, so much so that Tyrese Fauna was taken off after about 20 minutes and they went to a back three. I felt terribly for him, but it was needs bust. James Tilley on the right for Wimbledon was causing absolute havoc. So they started with a back four at the weekend, and in the defeat to Burton, and the two most impressive performers at AFC Wimbledon to my mind was a young lad, Jack Vale, who they signed from Blackburn, a centre forward, and Jake Evans, who's a Leicester loanee. And I thought, in doing my prep for that live game, I'd unearthed the gem, because everyone was talking about his performance against Peterborough, completely unknown to me. He's played about five times for Leicester in the Premier League. So this is a young lad, I think he's 17, 18, but he did really well in the second half. Just the mobility, because when they play with Tom Eaves, naturally they go back to front and it's all second balls, which Cameron McGeehan, for example, does prosper. We know that, making runs into the 18-yard box, getting on second balls. But those two lads, with their mobility, actually caused Wimbledon a lot of problems in the second half. They started started at the weekend. Didn't see too much within the highlights to suggest that they'd been central to their attacking display. Cameron McGeehan with the two best chances in that defeat to Burton. But I think it's that balancing act, isn't it? Northampton, we know to get out of trouble, it's probably going to be set pieces. We know it's going to be set pieces considering the lack of open play goals. We know it's going to be clean sheets. Can they be a bit braver? Unleash those two. Definitely in Evans, he's a wild card. And I said during that commentary against Wimbledon, he could be the one to maybe produce some goals to get them over the line. But it's looking increasingly difficult now with a 6-point gap up to Wigan in 20th, and Gary Caldwell's in there and already turned their fortunes around to a degree. So I can't see it, but I wish those two guys well, because I'm very fond of Samo, and lovely conversation I had with Colin Calderwood on Sunday lunchtime 2 weeks ago.
I once saw Colin Calderwood partner John Terry in Forest defence with David Prutton sat in front of them in midfield in a 1-1 draw against Charlton back in the year 2000. Into League Two, Clarky. Tranmere, this Pete Wild one happened as we were recording last season, but we didn't really react to it. Until the end of the season, 0-0 draw at Fleetwood, his old club. They're 7 points clear of trouble, so what, probably need a couple of wins. I'm always intrigued when coaches come in on an interim basis and kind of out of nowhere. What's the player's view on that? I mean, obviously it's individual, but my fear is that you kind of think, well, you're not going to be here next season. So do they have that authority, or is it just nice to have a fresh voice?
I think sometimes it's nice to have a fresh voice, to be honest. And I don't think really interim managers never used to really happen. You used to have a caretaker that would come in, but they would be internal.
Well, Barrow have termed it a caretaker, who we'll get to, but Tranmere are using interim.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something that I didn't really experience, someone coming in from outside to try and save you. I think as a player, you're just desperate not to go down. So if it's not working with the other guy, you're happy that there's been a change. And Pete Wild's CV is a good one. And I'd imagine the Tranmere supporters and players would be on board with it. Obviously, it's a bit weird for him going back first game at Fleetwood. I mean,
easy to prep, I suppose.
Very easy to prep. They only had three shots, right? So he hasn't blown the socks off of the supporters, I'm sure. They had three shots and they had 25.7% of possession. So they had to buckle down and sort of just defend their box. And they did defend their box really, really well. He was pleased with that. He changed the shape. They'd been 4-5-1 previously, and this was a 3-4-2-1. What intrigued me, right? I don't know if you knew this. I'm assuming you didn't know this. I'm sure you would have used it in your sort of witty intro here, Matt. He's a big Oldham Athletic fan, right? Pete Wild. And he's been out of work. The previous weekend, or previous game, he'd been in the Oldham away end, supporting Oldham against Tranmere. And then a week later, he's managing Tranmere. I mean, that has to be a first, surely. That could never have happened before. Sam, I want to ask you this. How do you feel about actual real-life managers going in at any away end, even if they're out of work? For me, it just doesn't sit right that an actual manager is a fan of a team to such an extent that they would choose to go in the away end. I don't know. I don't think I like it.
Well, I think you'd get it in terms of League One, League Two managers going to Premier League games. I could probably name a few sitting here now who go and watch them, maybe not in the away end, but in the seats that you also get a few prawn sandwiches along with. So having met him a few times, I know like the backstory as well. Proper Oldham, isn't he? So I don't have a massive problem with it.
No, I don't have. Of course, I don't have a problem with it. It's just really unusual. It's just don't know. But I suppose you can't help who you are, can you? I think football anaesthetizes your passion a little bit for clubs. It dullens the senses, doesn't it? Because you're on the inside and you know how it all works. And it kind of takes an edge away, I think, from you being a fan. But clearly for him, that his experiences in football haven't taken that edge away. So I'm a little bit envious of it in a way, I guess.
Do you think he's getting marched from the station? Like, you know, with the
that's what I mean. It just is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe don't do Oldham Rochdale if they ever beat again, Pete, when you're out of work. Do you know what I mean?
But I think he'll get them away from it. I mean, they're far enough away probably, but I think it's a good shout actually from Tranmere to bring him in, and he'll get enough out of them.
Yeah, definitely gone stale, hadn't it, under Andy Crosby. We get to Barrow last of all, but Sam, you know, Matt, sadly, you know, Walsall as a club, I filed this particular departure under sad but inevitable.
I spoke to him last week and yeah, he's disappointed naturally, but I think it feels like it was kind of the right time. I think that he feels like a fresh start with doing some good. And I don't think, and this is not me talking as a mate, but I don't think anyone could not suggest that he'll be in a good position to pick up another good role. I think because he's shown that he's a steady hand. He actually went in probably during a period where they'd not had great success and actually gave them a lot of hope, I think, and gave them some really good times last season. And yeah, they rebuilt in the summer, and I thought they did some really intelligent recruitment to make a really good fist of the first half of the season. But yeah, the results have been really poor, especially at home. And you know, this is me talking, not him, but you know, looking in from the outside, it felt like it had gone a bit toxic. And I think for his own sake, it was probably the right time to not be the Walsall manager anymore. And yeah, I didn't look too intently at the performance the other day. I've not had an opportunity, but Darren Byfield's obviously another friend, a former teammate of mine, and so often, and Clarkey already alluded to Barrow changing their shape. You know, they have been a 3-5-2 team, give or take, for the majority or the entirety of Matt Sadler's tenure, and Dan Byford's gone to the back four. He's played with wingers and it's proved incredibly fruitful. And you can get that, I think, is a little bit of the surprise element. It may have freed up a few of the lads who have not been playing, those wingers in particular. I think they were Albert Adoma's first goal since January, but I think the test is the next couple of weeks, isn't it? It's playing in front of the home fans. Can they reproduce what they did at Crewe the other day? So I wouldn't get too carried away, but obviously it's a much needed victory for them. And we'll see if Darren remains in charge, incredibly likable. And I'm sure, you know, the lads will fight for him and want to play for him because he's that type of bloke. And he's probably been that in between the last few years where he's not making the decisions. He's probably doing the finishing with the lads on the training ground. And he's probably been a good person, a good ally to go and talk to. But I think for Matt, yeah, he's probably in a position, and I think he was rewarded last season with a new contract when things were going really well to fend off interest from clubs in higher positions in higher leagues. And I'm sure that he'll be someone, because of his work, that will be on the shortlist for many a job come the summer.
Yeah. On Darren Byfield, very quickly, obviously, yeah, he's been that good guy on the training ground, close to the players, etc. But he was ruthless. He made some big changes, didn't he? He didn't mess around. Only one survivor from the previous defence, and that was Farquharson. So not bad. You know, and he made radical changes. I think he switched wings for OKK, didn't he? And in the end, even though it was an attacking mentality, they only faced six shots at Crewe, which is not bad going, is it? So yeah, really good start for him. So it didn't hold back with the radical shift, and it paid off. But Sam's right. Yeah, will that work over the coming weeks? Let's see.
Yeah, I think he was manager at Solihull Moors, if memory serves. So he has been a number one previously. So it's not just someone just completely thrown in out of the dark. So yeah, he's been a manager before. And he's obviously, I think I just read, is he 49? Feels quite old, that, for Daz Byfield. He's got a baby face, isn't he? But yeah, he's been coaching a fair old stint now. Yeah, so we shouldn't be looking at him maybe as an interim. Hang on, let me see how old he is. Got it here.
Well, he's got a 25-year association with Walsall, and he 49. Is 49 years old. You 49. Are absolutely right. And closing in on half a century, will he celebrate it as Walsall's permanent manager? That's not a question for today. All right, then, if you must, Sam. Barrow have wheeled out another manager. That went well, didn't it? 28 days later, Dino Marmria left, joined less than a month ago. He followed Paul Gallagher, only got 4 games. He lost all of those. Sam Foley, caretaker until the end of the season. Clarkie, at least they owned it. A statement said, "We recognise that this has been a very disappointing season with far too much managerial change."
Just a bit.
That about sums it up, doesn't it? And here they are in the bottom two. This is kind of got to work, hasn't it? But I mean, the form is just absolutely atrocious for them there. They are bang in trouble.
Massively in trouble, yeah. I think they're likely to go down, is my feeling. And what a season this is, by the way, across all the leagues, for short-term managerial stints. I've never known anything like it. You know, Gallagher, I read that Gallagher got 5 games, and Mamre had got 6 games. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? That is embarrassing, really. But they're panicking, and obviously they're turning to sort of very experienced player. Did you say player caretaker? Is that the term that they're doing here?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly caretaker, but he's still going to play. So yeah,
I think he's been injured, but yeah, like he is still
player taker.
Player taker. Yeah, I mean it's mad, isn't it? I mean, what can he do? Again, he did what all of these new guys did, and he changed the formation. He went from a back three to 4-3-2-1, changed two of his front three as well, Barrett at the weekend. So, you know, at least he's tried to switch things up a little bit. 0-0 it was at home to Accrington Stanley. Actually, not a bad result for Barrow, given how bad their form has been. I was looking at their squad, right, and I've mentioned this before with other teams. I always think you've got to have a balance. You can't have too many youngsters. You can't have too many oldies. I think I personally think it's always good to have three or four at least youngish players in your team, particularly in League One and Two. It's very athletic, it's fast paced. You need hungry players that aren't just looking to get another year. Young players are hungry. They want to make it. They want to get to the top. They want to go up the leagues. And I think sometimes with older players, especially ones that have played at the higher level, they're clinging on a bit. And I think, I don't know whether that's the right formula. I've been looking at it. The top 9 of minutes played for Barrow this season, 5 of them are over 30. In the squad, 13 over 30s. For me, that's way too many. Way too many. And the only player under 23 to have played 600 minutes or more, and 20 players have played that, only player under 23 to have played that many minutes is Lewis Shipley. Too old. Need some younger players in that team. Simple.
Fixtures are the first thing I wanted to mention. 5 games against playoff hopefuls. Promotion hopefuls. Away to Salford tonight. Grimsby, top 2. Bromley, MK Dons, then Chesterfield. Ooh. 5 games. So I can't see them getting too many points there. So it's going to go down to the wire for them if they are going to survive. Home form, this is something that we've obviously been hot on, I think, over the seasons doing the podcast. They've won 3 home games in 18 this season. Last year, 10 home games they won across the entirety. So that's a massive, massive problem. And on Dino Marmria, I know he's gone now. 28 days he lasted. He lost 7 points in the 89th minute or later across his 4-5 games. He was very, very unlucky. If you remember, they were 2-0 up at Fleetwood and they lost the game 3-2.
Too many oldies. They're knackered. Last 5 minutes.
Gillingham, we covered the Gillingham game, didn't we? About a fortnight ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. Lost in the 98th minute at home. Continuing theme, and it's cost him his job, but you know, we don't know. It's obviously the fit wasn't right. It's probably, you know, reading into the short stint and going for Sam Foley, who's obviously been around the club for a number of years, and I think when still fit, even at 39, he's one of their best players, so they'll probably want him to have dual roles if they are gonna survive.
All right, we're nearly done for the day. Before we do predictions and tweet of the week, let me ask you to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Thank you to everybody who's been leaving comments on Spotify in the last couple of weeks. It all helps other people find the pod, which is what we're after. And I'll also remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Now, predictions. One of those last week, a moral victory for me in a lot of ways, because I got every result correct. I just didn't get the scores right on any of them. So I got 3 points, Sam just the one, Adrian a big fat zero. So has that tightened things up at the top to any significant degree, Clarkie?
It has, yeah. It's getting a little bit more interesting. I mean, you're still adrift. You're on 41. Sam's on 52, and I'm on 60. So I have been at one point 12 or 13 ahead. That leads down to 8. So yeah, not squeaky bum time, but I'm looking over my shoulder now. Yeah.
All right. Well, winner's privilege, and I was the winner last week, just to reinforce that. So I'm going to go for Bristol City West Brom is the champ game that I picked out. I think West Brom are going to build on that momentum from beating Hull last week. I'm going to say 0-1 to the Baggies here. What do you reckon, Clarkie?
I'm going to go the other way and say that they're going to be buoyed, Bristol City, by that late leveller at the Riverside. I still don't really rate West Brom. I think they're not out of it at all yet. Bristol City to win this one 2-1.
Sam?
I'm going to flip Clarkie's scoreline. I'm siding with you, Matt. I just think whose need is greater, who realistically can still achieve this season. And I think West Brom's great escape is more likely than Bristol City getting into the playoffs. And my takeaway from last week, 3 goals by 3 front players all in the team. And that will give them confidence, West Brom, that they can find the goals. 2-1 Baggies.
Yeah, I like that. Sam, you can have first pick at Plymouth versus Huddersfield from League.
Someone might have to remind me of Plymouth's result from last week. And I know Huddersfield drew 0-0, didn't they? But I'm just going to go on form.
Plymouth drew 2-2 at Reading.
Decent result, yeah. Two teams going for the playoffs. Yeah, Plymouth are in a much better place than Huddersfield. The form is brilliant. They're scoring goals freely, and Liam Manning's getting a little bit of flack. 2-0, Pilgrims.
3-1 for me. What about you, Clarkie?
Oh, I had 3-1. Let's revise that. Do you know what? It's going to be a chastening afternoon for Liam Manning. You're going to get done 3-0 at Home Park, yeah.
Manning down again, maybe. Gillingham Bristol Rovers from League Duh. What do you think, Clarkie?
Yeah, it's not been good for Gillingham lately, has it? Bristol Rovers fighting. I'm going to go with Evans to prevail in this one. Gillingham, it's going to be an ugly game. It's not going to be pretty. Gills nil, Bristol Rovers one.
0-0 for me. What about you, Sam?
What did you go, Clarkie?
0-1.
Well, they've conceded 10, haven't they, in 2 games, Gillingham, and they play Swindon tonight as we speak. So that could be a massive game for Gareth Ainsworth's future. I can't believe that we're doing Gillingham Bristol Rovers and Clarkie hasn't drawn attention to the two chaps in the in the technical area. Could be lively, but I completely agree with him. I think Bristol Rovers could heap more pain. I'm going to go 2-1 away win.
Okay. Right. We'll let you know how we get on with that next week. Let's finish with our tweet of the week then. It comes from Courtney Baker Richardson of Newport, who's quote tweeting the account after their victory at the weekend, who said, "What a second half performance, stars in the eyes, emoji, hashtag one club, one county." Courtney says, in all caps, "It ain't over till ... big three firework emojis, let's go, exclamation mark, at Newport County." I don't like this at all, Clarkie. I don't like all caps. I don't like "it ain't over till" because the goals weren't late enough to justify that. And "let's go" feels a bit lazy. So it's a 2 out of 10 for me. What do you reckon?
No, I think you're being a bit too critical there, Sam. Matt, if I'm honest, "it ain't over till," I think, references the relegation race. I think this is absolutely, everyone thought we were down and we ain't going down. Trust me, we ain't going down. They're starting to believe. This tells you that Courtney Baker Richardson and the lads at Newport, they are all over this. And they think the great escape is definitely happening. Look, we can be critical of the Caps. Obviously, it looks ugly, but I like the excitement. I love the enthusiasm, the passion. If I was an exile, are they the exiles?
Exile, yeah.
Yeah, if I was an exile, I'd be loving that. Well done, Courtney. Yeah, brilliant. For me, 8 out of 10.
Wow, okay.
Have that, Davis.
He gets some kudos back from me for having a photo taken with Rob's son, as mentioned in the replies. Sam, you prefer this to me? You're more on Clarkie's...
I don't mind it. Not sure about the what is it, exploding emotions for the
fireworks.
I'm a fan of those.
You use those all the time.
Yeah. I prefer the trees for 3 points. It ain't over till it's over. That's Lenny Kravitz reference there, is it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's more it ain't over till the fat lady sings is the usual way that phrase is used, isn't it? But either is acceptable.
Both work. I don't like the let's go. But yeah, I mean, whose dressing would you rather be in now? Barrow, Harrogate, Newport, Crawley? I know they got the extra point on Crawley to state the bleeding obvious. Tranmere are throwing there as well. I'd probably quite like to be in the Newport dressing room with that experience. Few of the lads have got of performing the Great Escape, or it's just kind of in their DNA, isn't it? Considering the amount of time they've been up in the EFL now and managed to survive. So there's something building there. When a few weeks ago I would have had their man Harrogate probably needing snookers. So credit to both clubs for being in with a shout. And not the worst we've covered this season, Courtney. Not the worst.
Could have got some stick off his teammates if he'd done this, but instead of let's go, I'd have gone with fucks yeah. Like F-U-C-K-H-S, like we love the gaffer so much. It's a fucks yes kind of situation. But one to think about, maybe that guy who writes those bizarre match reports on the website could incorporate that in some way. All right, that's where we'll leave things for today. Enjoy the weekend's action. If you're off to a game, we'll be back with another show next week. But for now, from Sam, from Adrian, and from me, it's goodbye.